program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Audio Journal's Children's Hour. The selections for this hour are designed for school-age listeners. We're going to read books, poems, and some other children's print material. This program is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. My name is A. Michelle, and I am very excited to be with you today. For today, we'll be reading three stories. First up, in honor of National Tourist Appreciation Day on May 6, The Princess in Black Takes a Vacation by Shannon Hale and Dean Hale. Second, because World Turtle Day is May 23, Nate the Great and the Tardy Tortoise by Marjorie Wineman Sharmet and Craig Sharmet. And third, Consider the Paperclip from Wayside School Beneath the Cloud of Doom by Lewis Sacker. In between and throughout, since May 12th is National Limerick Day, we'll be reading various limericks from the man that made limericks popular, the poet Edward Lear. Limericks are nonsense poems that follow a specific rhyme pattern. For example, here's one I found on weirdholidays.com, a limerick about Limerick Day. On Limerick Day, let's be bold, compose verses clever and droll, with rhythms that swing, our limericks sing, in laughter our tales will be told. The poet Edward Lear, who lived from 1812 to 1888, wrote and published what is perhaps his best-known limerick, The Owl and the Pussycat, in 1871. See if you recognize this one. The owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea-green boat. They took some honey and plenty of money wrapped up in a 5-pound note. The owl looked up to the moon above and sang to a small guitar, "Oh, lovely pussy, oh, pussy, my love, what a beautiful pussy you are, what a beautiful pussy you are." Pussy said to the owl, "Oh, you elegant fowl, how wonderful, sweet, you sing. Oh, let us be married. Too long have we tarried. But what shall we do for a ring?" They sailed away for a year and a day to the land where the bong tree grows, and there in a wood a piggywig stood with a ring in the end of his nose with a ring in the end of his nose. "Dear pig, are you willing to sell for 1 shilling your ring?" said the piggy. "I will." So they took it away and were married next day by the turkey who lives on the hill. They dined on mince and slices of quince, which they ate with a runcible spoon, and hand in hand, on the edge of the sand, they danced by the light of the moon, they danced by the light of the moon. May 6 is National Tourist Appreciation Day. Tourists are people who travel for pleasure. While away, they might do exciting things like exploring new places, sightseeing, or staying outdoors, camping. A lot of people go on vacation because they want a break from their day-to-day life. In this story, our hero, Princess Magnolia, is a proper flouncy pink dress-wearing princess. When trouble raises its monster head, she ditches the dress and becomes the Princess in Black. But even monster-battling princesses get tired sometimes. Princess Magnolia decides she needs a vacation. Alas, sometimes a peaceful time away is hard to find. And now, The Princess in Black Takes a Vacation by Shannon Hale and Dean Hale. Chapter 1. It was dawn. The Princess in Black had battled monsters all night, and so Princess Magnolia was tired. Princess Magnolia lay down in her fluffy princess bed. She closed her eyes. She was almost asleep when... Bring! Bring! The monster alarm, she muttered. Not again. She stumbled into the broom closet. She slipped off her frilly pajamas. She fell into her black costume. Now she was the princess in black. A very sleepy princess in black. She went down the secret chute, onto the back of her pony, Blackie, and into the goat pasture, just as she had 14 other times that week. Roar! Said a toothy monster. Did you say snore? Asked the princess in black. The toothy monster shook its head. No! Roar! The princess in black wished it had said snore. She wished she were snoring right then. Eat goats, said the monster. They're not your goats, the princess in black mumbled. They're Duff's goats. Go back to Monster Land. The toothy monster did not want to go back to Monster Land. The toothy monster was quite set on eating goats. So the toothy monster and the princess in black waged battle. Sleepy slam, sluggish swing, double dozy, doozy fling. The monster picked up the princess in black in its fist. It opened its toothy mouth. It roared again. The princess in black opened her mouth. She did not roar back. She yawned. Just then, someone pulled the monster's tail. Chapter 2. A boy in a mask and cape pulled the monster's tail. A boy the princess in black had never seen before. Who are you? Asked the princess in black. And where is Duff the goat boy?
I am the goat avenger, said the goat avenger, and Duff the goat boy is busy somewhere else, not here.
The goat avenger was the same height as her friend Duff. He even had the same smile, but it couldn't be Duff. Duff did not wear a mask. That's funny, said the princess in black. Duff the goat boy is always here. This is his goat pasture. These are his goats.
Eat goats,
said the monster. The monster was still holding the princess in black. The monster still had a lot of teeth.
You may not eat the goats, said the princess in black and the goat avenger.
The monster winced. There were too many people with masks. It was all very confusing. The monster put the princess in black down. It stuffed itself back into the hole. In Monster Land, no one wore masks. Chapter 3. That was the 15th monster this week, said the princess in black. She yawned again. She curled up on the grass. Blackie snuggled up beside her.
You look tired, said the goat avenger.
The princess in black closed her eyes. A goat licked her ear. She rolled over. Another goat nibbled her hair.
"You need a vacation," said the Goat Avenger.
The Princess in Black opened one eye. "What's a vacation?" she asked.
"You take a break from work," he said. "You go somewhere nice, you rest."
"Well, that sounds amazing, but I can't take a vacation. Who will protect the goats?" The Goat Avenger put his fist on his hip.
"Never fear," he said. "The Goat Avenger is here."
Chapter 4. "A vacation," said the Princess in Black. She led Blackie back to the castle. "A vacation," said the Princess in Black. She crawled back up the secret chute. "A vacation?" asked the Princess in Black. She shrugged into her frilly dress. She was no longer the Princess in Black. "A vacation," said Princess Magnolia. The Goat Avenger would stay in the pasture. He would watch out for monsters and save the goats. Princess Magnolia packed. The best time to start a vacation was right now. Chapter 5. Princess Magnolia rode her bicycle to the seaside. After all, her pony deserved a vacation, too. The air was salty. The sun was shiny. The sea was as blue as monster fur. It was a perfect day. Princess Magnolia lay down in a hammock. She closed her eyes. She was just about to snore when someone said, "Hello, Princess Magnolia." Princess Magnolia opened her eyes. Next to her was a pile of snacks. Beside the snacks was another hammock. On that hammock was a book. Behind the book was Princess Sneezewort.
"What a surprise," said Princess Magnolia in her cheeriest sleepy voice.
"You sound tired," said Princess Sneezewort. "You should take a nap. I'll make sure no one wakes you."
"Thank you, Princess Sneezewort," said Princess Magnolia.
"Of course," she said. "That's what friends are for."
Princess Magnolia closed her eyes again.
"Later," Princess Sneezewort whispered. "We can play checkers."
Princess Magnolia was just about to snore again when she heard a noise. Roar! Princess Magnolia kept her eyes shut. A monster? On the perfect beach? Impossible. Roar! Princess Magnolia squeezed her eyes shutter. Maybe she was already asleep. Maybe she was dreaming. Roar! Princess Magnolia peeked with one eye. A huge head rose out of the water. The head was on a long neck. The neck was attached to a massive body. A sea monster was terrorizing her perfect body. Beach.
"Sorry," said Princess Sneezewort. "I didn't know how to make sure a sea monster didn't wake you."
And Princess Magnolia did not know how to make sure a sea monster did not hurt Princess Sneezewort. Princess Magnolia wore glass flip-flops. Princess Magnolia sunburned easily. Second-story windows made Princess Magnolia feel woozy. Princess Magnolia could not fight a sea monster. Chapter 6. The Goat Avenger stood tall in the goat pasture, fists on hips, chin raised, smile buckling, he waited for monsters to come. The goats chewed some grass. The goat avenger chopped at the air. He rolled on the grass. He said, "Yah!" The goats swallowed. Then they chewed some more grass. The goat avenger tried out some catchphrases. "Back, monsters! Back to your infernal pit! Beware! Watch out! Shoo!" One of the goats burped. The goat avenger went over to the hole. Monsterland was down there. All week long, monsters had been climbing out of that hole. The goat avenger had created his own monster alarm using ropes and bells. But nothing moved.
"Hello?"
the goat avenger whispered. "Monsters?" The goats chewed more grass. Chapter 7.
"Maybe if I just lie here, the monster will go away," thought Princess Magnolia.
"Roar!" said the sea monster. "Eat people!"
The people on the beach screamed.
"People are screaming," said Princess Sneezewort.
People ran.
"People are running," said Princess Sneezewort. "Should we run, too?"
People dropped ice pops in the sand.
"That boy dropped his ice pop in the sand," said Princess Sneezewort.
"Eat people!" roared the sea monster. "People, yum!"
Princess Magnolia sighed.
"You're right, Princess Sneezewort," she said. "We should run."
Some say that princesses don't run. But these two did. They ran very fast. Princess Sneezewort ran toward an ice pop stand. Princess Magnolia ran toward a bathing tent. She needed her disguise, and fast. Nobody knew that prim and perfect Princess Magnolia was secretly the princess in black. But she had to keep the sea monster from eating people, especially Princess Sneezewort. After all, that's what friends are for. Chapter 8. Duff the goat boy sat and watched the goats chew. His mask had itched. His cape had chafed. So he'd taken them off. He wished he'd brought a book.
"Clang, clang, clang!
The monster alarm," said Duff. Duff shoved on his mask. He tied on his cape. He was no longer Duff the goat boy. Clang, clang! The goat avenger put his fists on his hips and said, "Ha, ha!" Nothing came out of the hole.
Clang, clang!
The rope on the monster alarm was wiggling. The goat bells were clanging, but there was no monster in sight. Chapter 9. The princess in black stood on the beach. She said,
"Sea monster, you may not eat people."
"Roar!"
said the sea monster. Its tail slapped the water. A wave crashed ashore.
"Maybe it can't hear me," she thought.
The princess in black climbed onto a rock. She cupped her hands around her mouth. She said,
"Behave, beast!"
"Roar!"
said the sea monster. Its tail whipped the beach. It barely missed the ice pop stand.
"Maybe it still can't hear me," she thought.
She leaped onto its tail. She started to run up. Suddenly, the tail lifted into the air. The princess in black slipped. Then she slipped some more. She grabbed the tail and hugged it tight.
"Don't look down," she told herself.
She looked down. She gasped. The bathing tents looked like pebbles. the people look like ants. A bird landed on her shoulder. Squawk, said the princess in black. That meant, could you fly me down? Squawk, squawk, said the bird. That meant, so sorry, but you're too heavy. Squawk, said the princess in black. That meant, this was supposed to be a vacation. Chapter 10. The goat avenger squinted into the hole. Not so much as a tentacle appeared. Then what was setting off the monster alarm? A mystery. The goat avenger straightened his mask. He tightened his cape, a little too tight. He loosened his cape. Then he followed the rope back to a tree. A furry creature was caught in the rope. It was flailing. It was squeaking. It was a squirrel. Clang, clang. At last, a monster, said the goat avenger. A nearby goat bleated doubtfully. A squirrel could be a monster, the goat avenger explained to the doubtful goat. If you're an acorn. The goat avenger freed the squirrel. He said, don't eat any goats. The squirrel squeaked. It ran away, off to find acorns to terrorize. The goat said, ma. That probably meant that they were proud of the goat avenger. But the goat avenger shrugged. He'd had his heart set on a real monster. A scary monster. Chapter 11. The sea monster's tail was long, narrow, and slick. It reminded the princess in black of her secret chute. That gave her an idea. Swoop! If she hadn't been so tired, the sliding would have been a lot of fun. The sea monster's back was soft and springy like her mattress. She had to jump to get across it. If she hadn't been so tired, the jumping would have been a lot of fun. The sea monster's neck was high as a tower. She had to climb to get up. Actually, even though she was tired, the climbing was a lot of fun. She wondered about getting a sea monster for a pet, but it would never fit in her moat. At last, she reached its head. The sea monster tried to bat her off. So the princess in black and the sea monster waged battle. Serpent slip. Forehead crash. Twinkle, twinkle, little smash. She skimmed down to the tip of its nose. She looked it square in the eyes. Eat people, said the sea monster. No, said the princess in black. You may not eat people. The sea monster could hear her now. It frowned. No. No, she said. The sea monster sniffled. Its neck drooped. Its tail sagged. You could eat fish, said the princess in black. The sea monster straightened up. Yes, it said. Eat fish! The sea monster dove back into the sea. The princess in black had no choice but to follow. Chapter 12. The goat avenger swung in a hammock. He sipped lemonade. He read a comic book. The squirrel hopped onto his shoulder. The goat avenger shared his lemonade. It was a good day. Clang, clang, clang. Probably another squirrel, said the goat avenger. He stood and turned around. An acorn-shaped monster with one huge eye lurked beside the hole. Ah! Said the goat avenger. Roar! Said the acorn-shaped monster. Squirrel! Said the goat avenger. Terrorize that acorn.
Squeak, said the squirrel.
Ah, said the acorn-shaped monster. It leaped back into the hole. The goat avenger put his fists on his hips. He had done it. After all, he had saved the squirrel, and the squirrel had scared away the monster. Thanks to him, the goats were safe, and somewhere, thanks to him, the princess in black was having a vacation. Chapter 13. The sea monster plunged into the water. The ocean rose up. A wave formed, and the princess in black was on top of it. The water washed away her disguise. The wave rolled her to an island. It dumped her on the shore. Princess Magnolia looked around. The island was tiny. Nothing for miles. No screaming people. No ear-licking goats, and no monsters. It was perfect. Princess Magnolia curled up in the shade of the coconut tree. Vacation, she said. She closed her eyes. She said, snore. And then she did just that. As promised, here are some limericks in honor of National Limerick Day, May 12th. There was a young lady of Butte who played on a silver gilt flute. She played several jigs to her uncle's white pigs. Oh, that amusing young lady of Butte! There was a young lady whose nose was so long that it reached to her toes. So she hired an old lady whose conduct was steady to carry that wonderful nose. World Turtle Day is 26 years old on May 23rd, 2026. Woohoo! Let's celebrate. So World Turtle Day is a global movement by American Tortoise Rescue that is dedicated to protecting turtles and tortoises and their habitats around the world. Turtles and tortoises are essential parts of ecosystems and very unique because they are longer lived than many of the other creatures in the ecosystem. So, what's a tortoise, anyways? Is this just a fancy way to say turtle? Actually, there is a meaningful difference between tortoises and turtles. All tortoises are, in fact, turtles. They are both reptiles with bodies surrounded by a bony shell, but not all turtles are tortoises. The most important thing to remember about tortoises is that they only live on land. Yes, tortoises live in different places, like deserts or wet tropical forests, but tortoises don't have much to do with water other than drinking it and occasionally bathing in it. Tortoises are generally vegetarians, which means they only eat plants or fruits. However, other turtles are omnivorous, meaning they eat everything, plants, cheese, fruit, fish, or other kinds of meat. Without further ado, let us celebrate World Turtle Day with Nate the Great and the Tardy Tortoise by Marjorie Wineman Sharmet and Craig Sharmet. I, Nate the Great, am a detective. This morning I did not have a case to solve. I woke up late. I stretched. My dog Sludge stretched. We looked out the window. The sun was shining, the birds were singing, a tortoise was eating. A tortoise was eating the flowers in my garden. I do not own a tortoise. Sludge does not own a tortoise. Sludge and I rushed out to the backyard. The tortoise started to eat a petunia. A bite here, a bite there. He started to eat a daisy. A bite here, a bite there. I, Nate the Great, like to look at flowers. Soon there would not be any flowers to look at. I stared at the tortoise. He was green. He had a thick shell and a big appetite. He did not have any teeth, but he did good work without them. I knew I must take him away, but what would I do with him? You must live somewhere, I said. You must have an address and a telephone number. I know that a tortoise can live for a very long time. This tortoise could be 100 years old. He should know where he lives by now. He started to crawl away, slowly, very, very slowly. Was he on his way home? No, he was on his way to eat my violets. This tortoise was lost. He needed help. I said, I, Nate the Great, have never taken a case for anyone who is green and has a thick shell. But I must find out where you live and take you there. I got dressed. I wrote a note to my mother. Dear Mother, I am on a green case. I am helping a tortoise. I hope the case moves faster than he does. I will be back. Love, Nate the Great. I, Nate the Great, got a box. I put lots of holes in it. Then I put the tortoise in the box. I am taking you home, I said, wherever that is. Where was his home? I was thinking. This tortoise is slow. Perhaps he did not crawl very far from home. Perhaps he lives near here. But he knows how to find food. He could have been crawling and eating for days. He could have eaten his way from the other side of town. This tortoise could live anywhere. I spoke to Sludge. This is a strange pet. Who would own a strange pet? Sludge knew the answer. We rushed to Rosamond's house with the box. We walked up the front steps. Sludge sniffed the steps, step by step. I bent down to see what Sludge was sniffing. It was a trail of crumbs. They led to the front door. Sludge scratched at the door. Rosamond opened it. She was holding 2 crumbling cupcakes. Her cats, Little Hex, Plain Hex, Big Hex, and Super Hex, were eating crumbs from the floor. I have brought over a lost pet, I said.
Why, thank you, Rosamond said.
She opened the box and saw the tortoise.
This is not a cat, she said. It is green and has a shell. I do not want it.
This is not a gift, I said. I found this tortoise, and I am looking for his home. Do you know anybody who has lost a pet?
I heard that Claude lost something, Rosamond said. But I don't know what it is.
Claude is always losing things.
You are losing your cupcakes, I said. They are turning into crumbs.
These are tuna fish cupcakes, Rosamond said. Want some?
I, Nate the Great, had not eaten breakfast. I was hungry, but I was not that hungry. Sludge was licking up the crumbs. It was time to leave. So I said goodbye to Rosamond. Sludge sniffed his way down the steps. Then we went to Claude's house. Claude opened the door. I stared at him. There was something missing. He was not wearing a sock on his left foot.
"Have you lost a tortoise?" I asked.
"No," Claude said. "I have lost my sock."
"Do you know anyone who owns a tortoise?"
"I know that Pip and Oliver and Esmeralda and Annie do not own a tortoise," Claude said. "They do not have my sock either. Can you look for it?"
"I, Nate the Great, am on a case. I must find out where a tortoise lives."
"My case is bigger," Claude said. "My socks is size 11 and a half.
"I cannot look for it," I said.
"I will give you a clue," Claude said. "The sock matches the one on my right foot."
"Oh, good idea," I said. Sludge and I walked away. Claude yelled after us,
"If you find my sock, and it doesn't look as good as my right sock, I don't want it. I need a match."
I, Nate the Great, needed some pancakes. Sludge needed a bone. We went home. I took the tortoise out of the box. He crawled around the kitchen, slowly, very, very slowly. I made pancakes. I gave Sludge a bone. The tortoise looked at me. Was that a hungry look?
"You are full of flowers," I said. He kept looking. I gave him a piece of pancake. He took a little bite. "Your owner must wonder where you are and when you are coming home," I said. "You are one tardy tortoise." I, Nate the Great, ate a pancake and thought, I needed a clue. What did I know about this tortoise? Did he have any friends or relatives? How about hobbies? I knew that he liked flowers, crawled very slowly, and kept his secrets. That was it. This tortoise was never going to get anywhere. He was never going to be president of the United States or captain of the track team. He was just a pet, like Sludge. Suddenly I knew what to do and where to look. "This case is almost solved," I said to Sludge. "I know who would know where this tortoise lives." I picked up the tortoise and put him back in the box. "Let's go," I said. I, Nate the Great, and Sludge rushed to the veterinarian with the box. "Tortoises must come here just like most pets do," I said. "There should be a record of where this tortoise lives." We walked into the waiting room. It was full of dogs, cats, and people. The cats were meowing, the dogs were barking, One dog was barking the loudest. It was Annie's dog, Fang. He looked mad.
"Fang has a sore tooth," Annie said. "Look!"
I, Nate the Great, did not want to look at Fang's tooth. "I am here on a case," I said. I opened the box. "I need to ask the vet where this tortoise lives."
"Oh, a tortoise," Annie said. "I've never seen one here."
"I have never seen one here either," I said. "But they do not meow, they do not bark, and they probably come here in a box. A tortoise could be here and we would not see or hear him."
"Yes," Annie said, "but a tortoise is a reptile. This place is not for reptiles. Birds, goldfish, goats, pigs, wolves."
"How do you know?" I asked.
"Because they thought Fang was a wolf the first time I brought him. That's when I found out who doesn't get in."
I, Nate the Great, sat down next to a noisy cat. The case was going slower than the tortoise. This case had come to a dead end. There was only one more thing I could do. I could get the name of a reptile vet and go there and walk into a waiting room filled with rattlesnakes, boa constrictors, lizards, alligators, crocodiles, and other creepy creatures. Some of them have sharper fangs than Fang. I had seen enough bites today. I did not want to see any more, especially on me. This case had begun with bites. The tortoise was biting my flowers. Biting. Perhaps that was a clue. But what could I do with it? I looked at Sludge. He was the only dog in the room who was not barking. He was sniffing. I thought about him sniffing the trail of tuna fish cupcake crumbs. A trail. Did that mean something? All at once, I, Nate the Great, knew that the tortoise and Sludge had given me the clues I needed to solve this case. We rushed home. We went into the backyard. I pulled out my magnifying glass. "We are looking for a trail," I said. "A trail of bite marks on the flowers." I looked to the right. There were no bite marks. I looked to the left. I saw bite marks shaped like little U's on flower after flower.
"Follow those U's," I said to Sludge. "The tortoise ate his way to our house, so we will follow the trail of bites backward until we reach his house."
Sludge and I crept through my garden, past the yews on the petunias, on the daisies, on this flower and that flower. Then the flowers stopped. So did Sludge and I. "The trail stops here," I said, "and the cement walk starts. The tortoise did not bite the cement. We must go to the yard next door." Sludge and I rushed to the next yard. We saw flowers. And we saw ewes.
"This is easy," I said.
"This trail leads straight to another yard." Sludge and I made our way to the next yard. Then we stopped.
"This is not easy," I said. "This yard has no flowers. There are only weeds and grass.
Are they on the tortoise's menu?" Sludge and I peered down. We did not see any ewes, but we did see a trail of dirt where weeds had been, where grass had been.
The trail zigzagged. Sludge and I zigzagged. We zigzagged to the other side of the yard. The tortoise had munched and crunched his way from end to end. Then the trail stopped. More cement. On to the next yard, I said. But the next yard was full of rocks. But I saw something bright on the ground. Was it part of a flower? I bent down to look. It was Claude's sock. It was full of holes. I, Nate the Great, have just solved a case I did not want to solve, and found a sock Claude will never want to wear. I picked up the sock and put it in my pocket. Rocks and a sock, I said. This yard is no help. The trail is cold, but we will not give up. On to the next yard. The next yard was full of statues. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, 5 flamingos, and 3 ducks. There was nothing alive or green or growing. The tortoise could not have eaten here. The trail is getting colder, I said. Snow White, the 7 dwarves, 5 flamingos, and 3 ducks cannot help us find the tortoise's home. But I, Nate the Great, will never give up. Sludge wagged his tail. We went to the next yard. It was a mess. I saw pieces of flowers, pieces of weeds, pieces of grass. The yard had been bitten to death. Sludge and I looked at each other. I, Nate the Great, say that the tortoise must have eaten many meals in this yard. This must be his favorite restaurant. And suddenly I knew why. I saw a fence with a sign on it. Beware of the tortoise. I opened the box. I spoke to the tortoise. Welcome home, I said. The case is solved. I took the tortoise out of the box. Suddenly a lady came from behind the fence. She ran toward us.
Speedy! Did you escape under the fence again? You are late for lunch.
Lunch? I thought. This tortoise never stopped eating breakfast. I handed Speedy to the lady. Sludge's tail drooped. He was sorry to see Speedy go. So was I. Speedy was a flower wrecker, a very slow mover, and he had nothing to say. But he was an okay tortoise. We will be back to visit, I said. If you are here, remember where you live. I reached into my pocket. I pulled out Claude's sock. I tied it to the top of a stick. I stuck the stick in the ground. A flag for you, Speedy. This land is yours. You ate it. Then Sludge and I and the empty box started home, slowly, very, very slowly. And now, some more nonsense from Mr. Edward Lear. There was a young lady of Russia who screamed so that no one could hush her. Her screams were extreme. No one heard such a scream as was screamed by that lady of Russia. And now, from Wayside School Beneath the Cloud of Doom by Lewis Sacker. Consider the paperclip. Read a book, write a book report, draw a picture. That was the assignment Mrs. Jules put up on the board. Dana's picture showed a giraffe
studying a map. She had drawn a large question mark over the giraffe's head. Her book report only had to be one page, but she had written two whole pages. The Lost Giraffe was her favorite book ever. Now, all she needed was a paperclip. She searched her desk. She found quite a few pencils, mostly broken. There were lots of eraser bits and crayon nubs. There was also a crumb-covered pink piece of paper that had come off the bottom of a cupcake.
"Oh, no, 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 no," she moaned as she continued to search.
She raised her hand.
"Yes, Dana," said Mrs. Jules. "I need a new paperclip." "But I gave you one at the beginning of the year," said Mrs. Jules.
I know, Mrs. Jules. I'm sorry. I just can't find it."
Mrs. Jules sighed.
"I'm very disappointed in you, Dana."
"I need a paperclip, too," said Joe.
Mrs. Jules glared at him.
"What did you do with the one I gave you?" she demanded.
"I think I used it on my science homework," said Joe.
"I handed that back yesterday," Mrs. Jules reminded him. "Didn't you save the paperclip?"
"I guess not,"
Joe admitted. Bebe was finishing up the last part of her picture.
"Paperclip, please,"
she said, without looking up from her work.
"One for me, too," said Calvin.
Mrs. Jules slammed her hand on the desk.
"Do you think paperclips grow on trees?"
she asked.
I don't know," said Calvin.
"I gave each one of you a paperclip at the beginning of the year. It was your responsibility to take care of it."
She opened her desk drawer, took out her paperclip box, and opened it.
"There are only six left," she said, shaking her head in dismay.
"Oh, can I have one?"
asked Joy.
"I can't find mine."
Mrs. Jules was too angry to reply. She moved to the front of the room.
"You children are so spoiled," she said. "Do you have any idea what it takes to make just one paperclip?"
She held up one of her last remaining paperclips.
"Look at the perfect double loop and the way it gleams in the light, almost like a mirror."
Her anger seemed to melt away as she marveled at the magnificent metal masterpiece.
"It takes a lot of very talented people and years of training and hard work," she explained. "First, there's the wire maker. Paperclip wire has to be just right. Not too stiff, but not too wiggly, either. Then there's the wire polisher," she continued. "That's who gives the paperclip its special gleam. And the wire cutter, who cuts each wire to the precise length. And finally, and most important, the master bender. The bender carefully bends the wire into the perfect double loop."
She put her hand over her heart.
"Sadly, in these rush, rush, hurry, hurried days, not too many young people study the art of paperclip bending. There are only a handful of master benders left in the whole world. And
Who knows? In 10 or 20 years, there might not be any. Everyone will have to switch to staples.
That is so sad, said Dana.
Mrs. Jules gave the paperclip to Dana.
Now, don't lose it.
I won't,
Dana promised.
Let me see, said Bibi.
Dana proudly showed Bibi her new paperclip.
It's so beautiful, said Bibi, admiring the double loops. I never noticed before.
I'm going to be a paperclip bender when I grow up, said Calvin.
Mrs. Jules smiled at Calvin. She had never been more proud of a student.
This Children's Hour program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I hope you will join us next week for Children's Hour. If you have any comments or ideas, we'd love to hear from you. I'm A. Michelle. Thank you for listening.
This is Bird Note. A yellow-green vireo sings on its summer breeding grounds in Belize. This migratory songbird looks remarkably like the red-eyed vireo, commonly seen in the eastern U.S., with a bright white eyebrow and striking red eye. In the fall, most yellow-green vireos head to South America to wait out the winter months. But wait, this particular vireo is going north instead. You're going the wrong way!
You're going the wrong way!
What?
You're going the wrong way!
For reasons biologists don't fully understand, some birds change orientation, often by a full 180 degrees, and travel almost the same distance as the rest of their species, but in the opposite direction. The phenomenon is called misorientation. It's one of the most common errors in migration patterns among songbirds, especially those in their first year. For this reason, every now and then, a wayward yellow-green vireo ends up northward in, say, California. Unfortunately, many of these birds that we call vagrants never find their way back to their native range. But some of the disoriented birds do eventually find the proper route, getting more comfortable with the journey each year. For more about how to see rare migratory birds in your area, start at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mark Bramhill.
You're going the wrong way!
Hi, my name's Owen Devlin, and this is my story. When my doctor told me I was losing my vision, I was devastated. I worried about my future. How would I attend college? Find a great job? Start a family? Or even travel around my own neighborhood. Luckily, my doctor also told me about the Mass Commission for the Blind. They connected me and my family to a counselor who helped us to set a vision for my future. One that included assistive technology to allow me to go to school and find a meaningful job. A white cane to help me navigate, and even tips on how to use Google Maps on my mobile phone. I found out that losing my vision wasn't the end of the world.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find out if they are eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450. 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.